call the Sussex County Council meeting June 26, 2012 to order. Approve the agenda, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President, and good morning. We can amend under executive session job applicants' qualifications, personnel, and land acquisition, leaving pending potential litigation.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second. Mr. Phillips, any question on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. In your packet this week with the minutes of June 19th, any questions, corrections, or changes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, there are several items. First is, and there tend to be thank yous. The first is from Junior Achievement of Delaware, Inc. The next one is El Centro Cultural, Inc., the BB Medical Foundation, and Open Arms Food Ministry. The Sussex Cyclist and New Hope Center. They're all thanking for the contributions from council.
Does council have any correspondence?
He covered them.
Mr. Lawson, Mr. Report.
Yes. First item is the State of Delaware request for proposal regarding the process servicing contract. In your packet, there was material regarding the current contract that we have with the State of Delaware that is set to expire January 31, 2013. The Office of Management and Budget has informed me the contract has two remaining options to consider, which means if we were to extend the current contract under the current terms, we would do so for one additional year, or we could not extend the contract and allow the contract to be rebid, and we could choose to rebid under new terms of the contract. So today we need to make a decision as to our path forward. There was financial information, including the packet, involving the cost estimates to serve this contract and the cost to the sheriff's office, as well as current revenue for the contract.
Do you have a recommendation, sir?
I do. After the accounting department has done their contract analysis showing the cost to be, with one deputy, $59,000, and two deputies, close to $118,000, with our annual revenue estimated to be around $50,000, the current terms of the contract do not allow us to, or I would recommend not allowing us to extend the terms of the contract. And speaking with the sheriff's office as well, they agree that the terms were confirmed under previous Sheriff Swanson, and new terms should be rebid.
Any questions from council?
I would have thought that this is something that the sheriff would have wanted to come in and talk about. Was he invited?
Yes. The sheriff was invited. I spoke to him as late as this morning, asking him about his opinion on this contract. He concurred with me that the terms should be rebid, and I suggested that if we're in agreement, then he doesn't need to come in unless he wants to come in and personally discuss this, which I didn't think was necessary.
Okay.
You invited him to come to this meeting?
I did, yes.
It's my understanding that this particular aspect of their job is the most dangerous. Is that a consensus?
That's what I've been told. This service of the family court, these documents, the protection from abuse particularly, are... put them in a very, very difficult situation when they are serving these documents.
I mean, we're looking at a $4 million revenue stream this year from that office, and you're talking about something that's going to bring in $54,000 this year, even if we were to double it to, you know, $110,000 or whatever, $108,000, is it worth putting our deputies in such a dangerous position for revenue that's not even going to amount to, you know, a fraction of our effort?
It's a loss, yeah.
And even if it becomes a profit, you know, a small, you know, $40,000 profit or whatever it is, do we still want to put those deputies in harm's way? I mean, that's been a major point of contention over the last year. Do we even want to rebid it, I guess?
I think you're exactly correct. I mean, we had a discussion, and I think that that's the one area that they do feel somewhat in jeopardy on occasion. And I don't think any amount of money is worth putting our people in that position. I think Mr. Lawson's recommendation is that we would not renew the contract and let the state rebid it. And then at that point in time, when the contract comes out, I guess you could always make a decision to bid or not bid. But I would assume we would probably make a decision to not even bid the thing. But
that's correct. The only decision we need to make now is to tell OMB whether or not we would elect to extend the current contract today.
You want a motion?
Certainly. You want to make one?
I'll make a motion. We notify them that we will not extend the contract.
I'll second it.
A motion, Mr. Cole, second Mr. Phillips, to advise the state that we will not be extending the contract for the Sheriff's Department for serving the PFAs, and they can then rebid that how they see fit. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is the County Administrator's Report for June 26, 2012. Number one, earlier this morning, the Sussex County Mobile Library, better known as the Bookmobile, was unveiled on the Circle. With a new look and a new name, the unit is ready to serve the community during the busy summer reading months. This is the first major overhaul since entering service in 2000. Improvements include a new exterior wrap, a new exhaust system, replaced generator, and new carpeting, funded by a grant from the Delaware Division of Libraries. The Sussex County Mobile Library has 2,200 circulation items on board, including books, periodicals, DVDs, and audio programs. You can find the mobile library's scheduled stops on Sussex County's website. Number two, DLDOT 2013-2018 Capital Transportation Program. Sussex County invites the public to offer suggestions for the upcoming 13-18 CTP request, which the County Council will submit to DLDOT in early September. Residents and property owners with ideas for improving local roads, pedestrian walkways, public transportation, and other related infrastructure and services can go on the county's website to submit their suggestions. Submissions will be accepted now through July 27. Administration will review all suggestions and then compile a draft report for the county council's consideration in late August before submitting it to DLDOT in September. Delaware Solid Waste Authority reports. There were 33,148 pounds of recycled material received at the Recycled Delaware pods at West Complex in Georgetown during the months of March, April, and May 2012. Attached are the reports received for each month.
Something I'd like to make a comment on. Is that right?
Sure.
Back on Capital Transportation Program?
Yes.
We will be making a presentation, correct? Or listening or what?
We will compile a recommendation based on previous years, also public input.
Okay.
We will bring that to you for a report seeking your comments. That compilation will then be presented to DLDOT.
All right. My only comment at this point is just to alert maybe you and the staff as you do this. The public transportation, that is the dark bus that they have running up and down the coastal area,
mm-hmm.
Some of the locations they have picked out and chosen for stops are so illogical and odd that there's just no ridership coming from these spots. They have one at the end of, if you're anybody familiar with, like Fred Hudson, when Fred Hudson comes out of north of Bethany and hits Coastal Highway, you take a right, there's a telephone pole there, and there's a sign, and that's a dart stop. There's no houses around it, there's nothing around it, there's nobody ever gets on it, maybe one person. But to some somebody up in DLDOT picking that as a spot is ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
because nobody in their wildest dreams would see these little signs and think that would be a public, you know, stop being point for a, you know, public transportation bus. So we need, somebody needs to sit down and go through that with DART, and I think it would help county residents immensely. So please put that on your list of issues.
We will do it. Number four, projects receiving substantial completion. As you will see from the attached engineering department fact sheet, Warrington Creek Phase 3, otherwise known as Sawgrass, reached substantial completion effective June 20, 2012. Forest Landing, part of Phase 2D, and Seagrass Plantation, Revision 2, Phase 3, each reached substantial completion effective June 21, 2012. Finally, the Sussex County Council will not meet on July 3, 2012, preceding the July 4th holiday. A summer holiday for the County Council will also occur on July 10th. The next regularly scheduled meeting of the County Council will take place on July 17, 2012. County offices will be closed July 4th for the Independence Day holiday. Thank you, Mr. President.
The substantial completion that you talked about here, did that come under the new ordinance? I don't think it would yet. It would probably go back to the old way we did it, where it's an, really an administrative decision. Is that how it was decided? I know engineering did a study, but who made the decision?
I don't know the answer to that, but I can find out.
Okay.
On the what now?
Because we just had an ordinance that described it, what substantial completion will be.
Oh,
I
was definitely.
As soon as you come forward, please.
I know the process. Which project was it?
It was, well, we have Sawgrass, Warrington Creek, Forest Landing, and Seagrass Plantation.
Those are two different tracks. The ordinance that was discussed and I think introduced.
Talked about
that had
conditional
to do with
use.
Yeah, conditional uses. That had to do with substantial completion of the conditional use, the agreements, and the public works projects that Mr. Lawson was speaking of. That's a construction term in mm-hmm. their inspection process. So when they go through the sewer infrastructure or the roadways, there's a substantial completion that's built into their agreements in that process. So it's the substantial completion he was speaking of is different from planning and zoning and conditional uses.
Thank you. I had a question about it from a constituent this morning, so my ears are open.
Yeah, it's engineering as opposed mm-hmm. to planning and zoning.
Gotcha.
That's correct.
Right. Gotcha.
Al Godwin, wastewater agreement.
Sir. Mr. President, members of council, this morning we have one wastewater agreement for your consideration, and that would be Sussex County Project Number 81-04, the reserve at North Bethany, formerly Watermark, a.k.a. Blue Water Phase 2, Sanitary Sewer Agreement Number 712-2. The developer in this case is Mr. Joshua Mastrangelo from Chantilly, Virginia. The location is on the west side of Route 1, southbound, just north of Bethany Beach. This will become part of the North Bethany expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District, serving 23 single-family homes and a pool house. System connections will total $112,728. We do have the approval of our engineering department as well as DENREC. We're expecting 20 days of construction with a construction administration and construction inspection cost totaling $11,836.35, with a proposed construction cost of $78,909.
Do you have a motion, sir?
We have a motion, sir. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department for Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 712-2, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between Sussex County Council and the Reserve at North Bethany, LLC, for wastewater facilities to be constructed in the Reserve at North Bethany, formerly Watermark, a.k.a. Blue Water Phase 2, located in the North Bethany expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District.
Entertain a motion.
Yes, so moved.
Motion, Mr. Cole.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you. If you have a minute or two, I'll review with you
Please.
Our latest legislative update as to what's going on in the Delaware General Assembly. I will be attending the General Assembly session today, so I may leave here before your meeting is over. However, I want to take just an extra minute with this report and just touch on each bill that's on my report so that you understand which items we've been working on. In the past couple of reports, I've only highlighted the bills that were currently being worked on. The first bill on your review is Senate Bill 167. This bill has laid stagnant for several weeks now. This is the bill that dealt with how long there would be a time limit on lawsuits related to subdivision approvals, a bill that was essentially held up by its primary sponsor since back in early May. I don't foresee that bill to have any future in this session. By the way, this session will be over this Saturday. We'll be in session today, Wednesday, and Thursday. They'll take off Friday, going back in session late Saturday afternoon, and probably into the wee hours of Sunday morning. So I don't recall needing to be in the legislature on a Saturday night before, but this may be a first. In any event, House Bill 336 is the next bill that I don't believe has a future in this session. This was a bill introduced by us to circumvent the authorities found in state code requiring certification of our property assessors. The issue here really wasn't the certification of the assessors, but rather new standards that the assessors would have to use in their assessment process. I believe we have two more years before this law takes effect, so we will reintroduce something in January, and we'll take a little different approach on getting that bill passed. House Bill 274 is a bill that will actually allow our dog licensing office a little more flexibility. The bill stalled in committee, but there's going to be discussions in August about some new features in the dog licensing process. This bill, House Bill 274, would have allowed dog licenses to expire all through the calendar year rather than just in the first quarter. In the first quarter of each year, our licensing office is very busy issuing dog licenses, and then there basically is no more work to do because dog licenses all have to be renewed by March. This bill would have allowed those licenses to be renewed all through the year. However, I'll make other comments about the dog licensing process later in my report. House Bill 278 is our tax interceptor bill that we've had introduced. I do believe this bill will pass. It's in the Senate now. It's been through the House. It's not on the agenda yet, but I'm confident this bill will become law by the end of the session, as will House Bill 281. This bill will remove the $3 floor out of our capitation tax, so you can adjust the capitation tax down below $3 if you'd like to. I'm confident that bill also will pass and become law before the end of the session. The next bill, House Bill 283, was a bill that we had introduced that would have made some adjustments in our personnel rules. That bill passed the House. It stalled in the Senate, and I do not believe it's going to pass this session. We've been working internally here in our office as well as with the legislature, and I think we're going to probably reintroduce some legislation similar to this in January that may have a more comprehensive effect on all of our personnel rules. But I don't think 283 is going to get finished this year. Senate Bill 156 was a dog bill from the next bill. Senate Bill 156 is a dog bill from last session that stalled. This was a tethering bill. It was very comprehensive. It stalled in the Senate. It never got through the Senate. And there were a number of problems with cost, and it was a very detailed bill that was very involved, and there was a lot of resistance from all three counties. However, I will tell you that Senator Blevins, who is an avid dog supporter, dog enthusiast in the Senate, and she's also majority leader of the Senate, has promised me that there's going to be a broader discussion in the off-season, sometime between the end of June and January. She has established a committee to address all of the dog laws, dog licensing, and all of the enforcement of dog rules and laws. And her ambition, as she has told me, is for the state to take dog licensing back from the counties. She feels that it's unfair the way that it's been delegated to the counties, and I think all three counties agree with her. And I'm very optimistic because Senator Blevins is a leader in the Senate, and I believe that her opinion carries significant gravity with it. And I'm very optimistic that if I get to work with her committee over the summer, that we'll find some path forward to either send dog controls back to the state or find a way for the counties to be able to service this responsibility more reasonably.
I wouldn't mind making a motion that we would support the state, you know, taking back the authority.
Yeah, I think I already have that somewhere. I think a week or two back you already said that, which I had conveyed that to Senator Blevins.
I'm speaking for everybody, but I'm sure we still feel that way.
Yeah.
they'd probably pass a law that all dogs would have to be tethered out in the front yard, so when the dog catcher goes, dog control man goes by, it could be able to see them. Because they have them back in the woods or else it'd just be a, I think all the hours could be wasted here.
I make a motion to put Sam on that committee.
I'm being a little facetious, but actually I think the Title IX also tells us that the Delaware Code, by giving the county governments the authority to govern, it sounds like to me they've lost the Title IX here in trying to come back and govern the county.
Well, as I'll report to you later on another bill, I have some other comments about the dog licensing process I'll get to in just a minute. The next bill on my report is House Bill 325. This bill has been through the General Assembly and signed into law by the governor, clarifying all the authorities and responsibilities of the county sheriffs. Senate Bill 149 is the Endangered Species Bill. It didn't move very well since June 23rd of last year. This bill was introduced and really didn't get much traction. It is a very onerous bill. House Bill 227 has passed both houses, and I assume it will be signed into law. This bill, while I had some fear of it when it was first written, was amended so that it really doesn't have much effect on the counties and their authority. It simply sets up a priority listing as to how grant funding will be dispersed and it'll be graded as per universal design. So it's sort of a measuring tool to monitor, to allocate out grant dollars mm-hmm. based on whether or not a property has universal design features.
That would be handled yes. here in with community and development.
Correct. And our community development office and our building code office both said that they could work with the new regulations. Mm-hmm. Okay. That wouldn't be a problem. But they were, a matter of fact, already on board with most of them in our processes. Gotcha. Senate Bill 195 was a bill that I do not believe will get finished this year. This was one that required local governments to disperse disclosure materials about property subdivisions that were going to have additional bonus densities or were going to have densities above the normal zoning. I don't believe Senate Bill 195 will clear all the hurdles in the General Assembly this year either. House Bill 322, this is one of our bills we had introduced. This bill is on the Senate floor this afternoon, one of the reasons why I need to be there. And this bill will allow the counties to assemble their property assessment appeals board only upon appointment, rather than requiring them to meet for 15 days every March and not hear any appeals. This will save us not significant dollars, but somewhere in the range of $5,000 a year in operation costs. All taxpayers will still have opportunity for an appeal to be heard, just be done by appointment rather than having an open desk, if you will. Senate Bill 211, this bill is another one of these dog tethering bills. I do believe this bill will pass both houses and become law. It's already passed through the Senate, and I believe it'll probably pass the House sometime in the near future. This bill has been amended, however, I should tell you. It was amended on the 20th of June to allow farms of 10 acres or larger to be exempt. So if you have a farm of 10 acres or more and a dog, this tethering law will not affect your operation. The reason I don't have any fear about it for our government is because this law is being added into Title 11, which is the criminal code, not the county code, Title 9, as Sam was talking about. This will make dog tethering an animal cruelty charge, which is criminal, not under our county authority in Title IX. So therefore, the Delaware SPCA will do the enforcement, and if the Delaware SPCA is not able to, local law enforcement will address all accusations about dog tethering beyond the 18-hour limit that this law brings.
I'm glad to see it reduced it from 20 to 10, 10 acres.
Yes.
That's a good...
I mean, what is the logic of that? If
There have been some... We don't see much of it in this county, but I think upstate in the more urbanized areas, you'll find dogs that are tethered for a prolonged period
of
time.
Right, but I'm just saying that the 10-acre issue, I mean, if they're worried about the cruelty to dogs being tethered, why, if you have 10 acres, you're exempt? Or 20 acres. Or
because there was
acres.
A real, I'll tell you why. It was mostly Pam Thornburg from the Farm Bureau who insisted on something being adjusted in this bill in committee last Wednesday. She was very emphatic about her objection to the bill and was lobbying to have the bill stopped in the House.
Well, that would have been a good move, right? But...
And the compromise out of committee was that they basically exempted all of her constituents, which were the farmers.
These farmers keep getting exempted from everything.
Well, George, that's because we can turn the dog loose without running over the neighbors. If you've got a half-acre lot, the dog, it's hard to keep on a half-acre, but you've got 10 acres or more.
Good point.
A reasonable dog will stay on your own property. So where's the problem? I mean, why haven't hit her? That's what the point
is. I know. You farmers, I don't know.
Well, I think we've got a good reason not to.
It's about the dogs running loose, it's the tethering. But go ahead, move on.
I'm sorry. If you can continue, please.
Yes,
please.
Yes, sir. Finishing up, Senate Bill 231 is the last bill I have to explain to you. This is the Freedom of Information Act bill that we talked about last week. It was introduced late in the session. It passed the Senate last Thursday. I believe it'll pass the House. I did make your comments known to the sponsor and to the President Pro Tem of the Senate last Thursday when the bill was considered. I made a point to them that we were concerned about the cost, and we were also concerned about the definition of when a FOIA request actually happens. Is it at a phone call? Chip explained this pretty eloquently to Tony DeLuca, Senator DeLuca, last week, that we wanted to know, when is it considered a legal FOIA request? Is it when there's a phone call made or when they actually fill out a form? And the senator led us to believe, as well as Senator Peterson, led us to believe that the law required them to actually use the form, and they would not consider it a FOIA request under this law unless it was done on the form. In any event, that's my report. If you have any questions, I'll try to address them about the legislature. Otherwise, I'm northbound in about half an hour.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We had a...
Sorry, Mr. Wilson.
We had last week, Hal, or somebody here, and page 8 says here that Mr. Godwin plans to attend the Senate session this date, and he will try to get access to the floor. And it was on FOIA. And we wondered what came of it.
Which bill?
231.
That's what we just talked about.
Okay. I was going to ask the question, was Chip, were you able to go with him, Chip?
Yes.
Okay.
We both spoke with Senator Peterson, and I also had a couple of minutes to speak with Senator DeLuca about this bill.
Does it seem promising or what?
No, it's going to pass.
It's going to pass. Okay.
More questions, Mr. Godwin? Thank you, sir. Mr. Robertson. Comprehensive plan report.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vincent and the members of council. As the agenda indicates, what we have right now is a report to the Governor's Advisory Council on Planning. A little bit of background on this. As council, I'm sure, is aware, state law previously said that you had to do a comprehensive land use plan or update every 5 years. And from my experience, having gone through basically two of them, you adopt the plan, you have 18 months to implement it, then what you almost need to do is start your RFP for your new land use consultant, start the new plan before you find out how well the old plan and its ordinances were working. So state law was actually changed for all the counties. It says now the comprehensive plans are required every 10 years. As part of that, an amendment to the state law also recently added a requirement that there needs to be an annual report on the status of the prior plan. The first of these reports is due July 1 of this year. So what we have done with the cooperation of staff, and that's basically all the departments within the county and legal staff, has put together a report looking back to 2008. Again, since this is the first of those annual reports, we took a bigger look at it going all the way back to 2008 when the plan was adopted, just to make sure we picked up everything. And when you look at the statute, it's not designed to be a report looking forward. It's a report that looks back on what we've been able to accomplish within the 2008 Comprehensive Land Use Plan. One of the things that we did in the plan in 2008 was actually put a list of ordinances to be considered. In prior plans, you kind of had to call through the plan to see what you would need to do to implement some of the goals. In this case, with URDC, we actually listed them. So the report goes through each of those 23 ordinances and how the county has considered them, which again is required under state law. And I'm pleased to say that they've all been considered, and a majority of them have been adopted in one form or another. Many of them have been adopted in a single topic ordinance amendment to either the subdivision or zoning codes, or the topics that were listed in these 23 items were incorporated into other ordinance amendments. As I mentioned, in each case, they were considered by planning and zoning and county council separately. And in addition, there was a joint workshop that was held in 2010 where they were all discussed at that point, the ones that were remaining to be considered. So I'm not going to belabor it, but in the report that we've prepared with staff, it goes through each of those 23 and how they were considered and sort of how they've been implemented. The one thing, going back to what I summarized a moment ago, that we found is that, for example, with the new superior design standards for cluster subdivisions, because of the economy and the time frame we've been dealing with, we haven't had a chance to test them yet. There just simply hasn't been that many large subdivisions that have been filed that would utilize that process. Another example would be the county's moderately priced housing unit ordinance and the affordable rental unit ordinance. We had a few go through that were approved with that, but for whatever reason, not because of the county, but for whatever reason for the developer, those projects never made it to final. So we kind of haven't seen how all these types of things are actually put into action, which is one reason why we appreciate the extension of the plan till really 2018, so that we can see how this stuff works before we go trying to fix it or change it.
I thought we had some in Ellendale that were being built.
We did. I think there's that one that is underway. I know I talked to Lawrence about that, and I'm not sure that any of the ones that were approved that way or actually received final site plan approval. The one that comes to mind, for example, would be the one out here at the Speedway. I know that was approved as an MPHU plan, and there's a few others around the county, but they haven't gotten final site plan approval to roll ahead. So we went through in the report all those 23, again, looking back over the past 4 years or so since the last plan and how they were addressed and in many cases adopted. And then the next stage of it was to go through the 10 elements in our comprehensive plan, and those elements are required by state law, and discuss how those elements have been addressed. Certainly the big one is, in terms of land use, is the future land use element of it. And as we outlined with the help of planning and zoning, the one thing that we've seen since 2008 is a reduction in the number of applications, and we go through that process in that explanation. We talk about the conservation, water, and wastewater elements. Since 2008, the County Engineering Department and County Council have created two new sewer districts, brought them online, and there's several thousand, I'd say probably close to 2,000, a little more, EDUs that have been brought into a county sewer district, taking septic systems and failing central systems off the inland bays. So that's been a good accomplishment since 2008. We go through the parks and recreation element. The housing element, in there we talk about some different things, including the county's participation in the federal neighborhood stabilization programs, where we've been able to get housing for a lot of low to moderate income families in Sussex County. The economic development element, we go through the capital improvement budget, the airport expansion, the Nanticoke dredge projects, some other different things that have promoted the economy and economic development in Sussex County. In working with Dan Parsons, the historic preservation element, we've talked about some of the different things that he's been able to accomplish with the help of the county and county council throughout the county. We speak about the intergovernmental coordination element, the community design element, and the mobility element, although, as we sort of talked about or heard a moment ago with, I think, Mr. Lawson's report, on that one, as we have in the past, DLDOT sort of sets the mobility element for our comprehensive plan, and we participate in that through the state's capital transportation program and comments that we receive from our county residents. So it was kind of an interesting and useful tool, I think, to look back and see where we've come since 2008, and particularly how far we've come in addressing and considering those 23 ordinances, and as I said, in many cases, implementing them. So This will go with the council's support to the governor's advisory on, the governor's advisory council on planning in County Highland. It already received support from the Planning and Zoning Commission last Thursday. And so with that, I would ask that council support it. And I forgot to mention, I just want to circle back a second. One thing that's really helpful, as Lawrence's office, Planning and Zoning, put together as Exhibit A to this, what we're going to submit is a list of the subdivision zoning changes and conditional use approvals that were granted since 2008, because that's something that also Ms. Holland's office wanted to see.
I understand we were required in the plan to create some regional plans, and that some have been created, like around Georgetown, for instance, and one at Milford. Is that not part of it? Ms. Holland had told me that was in something that we should be doing. Is that not true?
Well, it may be something we should be doing. As I said, this is a look back.
But it's not in that plan? It's not in the 2007 plan?
The 2008 plan.
Whatever.
I will look at it. I think there's a discussion of that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't one of the specific ordinances
right.
or topics that we looked to. But we will do this report every year, so if that gets more attention in the next year, that would be included in that report the following year.
What do you think are the repercussions if we put these reports in? We have 23 ordinances we've not addressed. Next year we put it in the same report. We have 23 ordinances we haven't addressed. And next year we do another. What are the penalties, or what is going to be the feedback from the state if we don't start implementing and moving forward on some of these issues?
Well, that's my point, is we have addressed all 23, and we've probably adopted, I would say in one form or another, 18 to 20 of them. They've all been considered. I mean, they all got consideration at Planning and Zoning and County Council, and that's what the state law, it's been our opinion, legal staff, that's what's required. And they've all absolutely got consideration, and we've gone a long ways to implementing them or dealing with them. I mean, I can run through all 23.
No. When I glance over some of these 23, there's some of them have been like issues that have been festering for years.
Mm-hmm.
And we to say that we've considered it, we've talked about it, that's considering it, we move on. We haven't really addressed it formally by either having an ordinance in front of us and rejecting it. And going through that process.
Is there one in particular?
No, I look at a lot of these things. I'm not a farmer, but I look at the first one. It says an agricultural zoning district. For years, I've argued that we, our agricultural district favors, high density residential growth in an ag district. I don't think there's very few places in the country that permit 2 units to the acre in their agricultural district. So if we think as a council that agriculture is so important, we ought to maybe do and split like we did the commercial. We have now, CR1s and the old CU districts. In other words, look to make some other districts to fine-tune this a little bit and to use the argument that everything's slowed up. We don't have to do it now. There's no pressure. Now's the time to do it while we're slow. To be in the heat of all those applications and try to address some of the stuff is crazy, but okay. Now would be a good time to look at some of these issues, and that's just an example of my personal opinion, Vance, that we're not protecting agricultural lands enough. We have too many subdivisions out in the middle of some of our prime agricultural areas, and I don't think I should be paying, as a taxpayer, farmers not to farm their land or to keep it as open space, but to pay them, stuff. I don't like those kind of programs, but I think we can address it through zoning and just say that as a permitted use, maybe farms shouldn't be able to be able to walk in and subdivide them up.
Well, keep
that
in
easy.
Keep in mind that there is an agriculture district through the farmland preservation program that does not allow 2 units per acre. A very significant number of acres in the county have participated in the program.
Yeah, you got to participate. I'm talking about something different. That's a good program. If you like it, that's a good program. I'm just saying at the county level, we're not doing really addressing it. That's a state level program.
Well, I think the county has provided significant funds through direct payment to the agricultural preservation program and through the Sussex County Land Trust. I think what you're talking about is stripping farmers of the equity in their land by downzoning them to strictly agriculture.
Well, there's a lot of farmers that do actually want to, be farmers, and there's some farmers that want to be developers. So we would go through a hearing process. It may not be appropriate, but I'm just saying we need to maybe, I think personally, but that's another one. But then there's other things like, like a definition for allowable open space. We've debated that one, Lawrence, for years. You know, what's open space? What's not open space? One developer, I got all this open space. Well, it's all parking lots. Now, is that an open space?
You're getting
So I'm just saying, these are issues that we have not addressed, and to say that we're considering them, I think eventually the state of Delaware is going to catch on that using that word, we've considered it, isn't going to be sufficient, because Sam, now they've given us 10 years to revise where it used to be 5 years. I think they're going to be scrutinizing what we do closer. So
remember one thing, George, you can't pick and choose what farmer can sell his land or develop it. This is not China. This is property rights.
No, that's another day. That's another debate for another day. I'm just saying these are some of the issues we've not addressed.
But you're kicking around those issues. I mean, you're right in on it. You're taking away property rights and speak what you're saying.
Just to be clear on this, and
possibly.
What the state law requires is it to be considered. So that's what the purpose of this report is.
Well,
I can tell you with the Agricultural Zoning District, URDC did a study on that and discussed it at the joint workshop.
Right.
As Mr. Phillips said, there is an agricultural preservation district program. My point is, going through each of these 23, there's none of them that have received no consideration. There's nothing to prevent the county from drafting an ordinance to deal with it. Now, the one thing I should go through these. I hate to do it, but I'm going to do it briefly, just the way this discussion is going. We've talked about the agricultural zoning district that got consideration, removed barriers to manufactured housing. There's four ordinance amendments that dealt with that. Density bonus for cluster development.
Wait a minute. Remove barriers. We did something on that? I know we did some cleanup.
We had a committee that was set up to deal with manufactured housing.
Change the way that we call them, this, that, and the other. But
We dealt also with setbacks and accessibilities to the homes and things like that. In addition, we worked with several of the mobile home parks to get site plans so that folks would have a better baseline to establish whether they met the zoning criteria for placing their homes.
And does that accomplish the goal there?
I would say that it removes a barrier to manufactured housing and that it prevents somebody from having to go to the Board of Adjustment for a variance to place their home. I mean, it's all encompassing, and that committee, I believe, is still out there to be utilized. Mm-hmm. Transfer development rights, that's been talked about over the past 4 years, more towards when the comp plan was adopted. And what it ended up as URDC recommended to the council. We did the bonus density ordinances for clusters and subdivisions and multifamily projects. Green stormwater management, that was one that URDC and I concur with. We have the conservation district that has its own stormwater management codes. We don't want to duplicate them.
They have no enforcement power.
Well, right now we have state laws, and we don't want to create competing state laws.
We don't have a drainage code.
The County Engineering Department and the Conservation District addressed that. We've revised our forested buffer ordinance. Well,
Joan, you're saying things.
I've got homes that are going
to
flood.
Don't you have to finish, man? Finish.
I've got new homes that are going to flood.
And as I said, we're reporting on what's happened up to this point.
Right.
I mean, next year or the year after, if ordinances come into play, in that report, we would describe what we've done since then.
But we said that we rely on the Sussex Conservation District. And I'm just pointing out that they don't have enforcement power.
That may be the truth, but also state law establishes that they have jurisdiction over stormwater management. So unless state law has changed and the county code's completely revamped, I mean, that's the situation we have now. What we can't do, it strikes me, is incorporate new stormwater management design requirements into our county code until we determine that the county and not Sussex Conservation District, for example, has jurisdiction over that. We did a wellhead protection ordinance. The source water protection ordinance was adopted in 2008. There was an ordinance amendment that dealt with public sewer providers in county sewer service areas. We reauthorized the moderate priced housing unit program and established the rental unit program, so that's been done. Agribusiness zone, there was an ordinance that was drafted by URDC on that. Yeah, we have not done that. It was drafted and considered. Those are still considered on a case-by-case basis as conditional uses mostly. Mm-hmm. There is a demolition of historic structure ordinance that's been drafted with the assistance of the county's historic preservation planner, and that was discussed in 2010. And in talking with our planner, that is still under consideration. traditional neighborhood development. That was sort of dealt with in the superior design amendments to the code. One of the things that legal staff talked about was the fact that if you get into, that's more of an aesthetic issue. It's not something that you want to necessarily put in your county code. Development standards regarding building setbacks, buffering, and landscaping, many of those things were adopted into the superior design standards, open space definitions, which we have, and wellhead protection. We strengthened our cluster development regulations. We did an ordinance on sign controls, and that's currently under consideration. That's one that's going to require probably regular reviews. There was a number of them that were all considered at one point or another and adopted at one point or another.
But my only question was, not to get in each one, was just the tolerance for the state for us considering. I mean, how long will they be tolerant of, you know, maybe say one particular ordinance or area that we've just considering every year, considering, and it appears that we're not doing any action. So, I mean, is there anything that you read into this whole way that the state's now going to approach the county in dealing with that thing? They may look at it as a dodge on our part, you know, just to avoid these things.
I don't believe that they'll find it as a dodge, because the state can't mandate that we implement ordinances.
Okay.
All they can do is ask that we consider them. I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, in every case the consideration's over and done with. You know, I'm just reporting on the consideration that's been received.
Gotcha.
In the past 4 years.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's it.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion to authorize this submission?
I would say we probably do.
Do you have any?
I do, if you're prepared for a motion.
Yes, please.
It's fairly straightforward. I move that the report regarding the status of the 2008 Comprehensive Development Plan prepared by staff be forwarded to the Governor's Advisory Council on Planning.
I'll make that motion.
Motion,
I'll
Mr. Second. Phillips. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion?
Yes.
Mrs. Deaver?
I have questions on it. In 2007, we adopted the Comprehensive Land Use Plan, which was effective in 2008. We had hearings all over the county. Many, many people were involved in that, and they knew what was going on. And now, because of a change in state law, we only are going to do a report every 5 years instead of doing a plan. We were doing plans every 5 years.
Right.
Now we're doing them every 10 years with a report in the middle.
No, it's a report
every year.
The first one that they've required.
Right.
This is the first one.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Okay, so then it's the first one, and you're going to do another one next year?
There has to be one July 1st of every year.
Okay, so that was their date. Okay, but my point is this. This is a big change for people. In my district, I have 10,000 new people. I had the development, most of it, in the county, in my district. And this is a huge change. The fact that, I mean, quite a few folks are surprised that we don't have to do a new plan every 5 years. I think that this should have been advertised. I think it should have been on the web. I have folks in one town, I'm not going to mention names, but they have found now that their new neighbor is going to be a 700-acre wastewater facility. They want to know, how could that happen to them? It's in the Comprehensive Land Use Plan. But if we're going to do a report like you did, they really should have something to look at, to look what we've done. You know, and I have no other answer for them other than it's been approved. It was approved in 2007. So it's very important. This report is extremely important to our district. And there, you know, there has been no public participation in this report. I just found out this was coming a couple days ago. I would love to have known what the staff was doing on this. This is a very busy district that I represent. And, you know, as far as where people would find information, it's very difficult. I think we need more transparency. But, of course, the overall Comprehensive Development Plan is very loose and very lax and doesn't do a whole lot for folks. We looked at 17 points regarding subdivision approvals. We talked about it. We didn't do anything. I do see you have a future use chapter or paragraph here. You do have future land use.
That's one of the elements of the plan. So
in your report.
We recite what's happened in that element that was in our plan from today back to 2008.
And the regional plan, I would like Cape District does want to, and working on a regional plan, and they're going to want your support, County Council support on that. And so I think this is very, very important. It's an excellent report. It's so important to folks. They are new here. They weren't here in 2007, so many of them. And they want to know, why are these things happening now? Because the economy's coming back, you know, and they're seeing these things. So I think we should have heard from a planner on this. I think we should have a planner. And that's pretty much what I have to say, and I won't vote for it.
Well, the state, Joan, determined that we change from 5 to 10 years.
It's been mandated
to us, and I guess it's a development.
I'm not complaining that the state did that.
We didn't initiate.
It's a change to people who have been participating
for years. No, I agree with that. And every 5 years, it was on our, you know, it was on our
right.
schedule, and more people were, you know, alerted to it. But now every 10 years, you're right. It's not. It's going to be in the back burner a little bit, and that is a big change. And and we have a tendency here to, you know, to not move forward on some of this stuff. It gets tabled and it gets maybe forgotten unless somebody digs it up, or because of some big development triggers something. And right now we don't have any big developments triggering anything. So a lot of these land use issues are on the back corner. I say, because it's slow, we ought to maybe have a workshop sometime before we address the next thing and go through this, because there's some new councilmen here that haven't been involved in that many land use plans and how we got to where we are. So I think it wouldn't hurt to get together with planning and zoning and have an annual discussion. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I can respond to Ms. Deep.
I'd like to take the vote.
Okay.
If I can. That was a no from you, Mr.
Yes.
Cole. Thank you. Mr. Phillips.
Yes, I'd just like to say that it's a very comprehensive report that is a staff mandated process. I think, you know, Ms. Deaver's no vote is an indication that she doesn't really appreciate all the work that went into this. And I really believe that when you consider that we've gotten probably 75-80% of
don't get personal
elements bits. Completed, we've done a very good job, and I'd like to congratulate you and the rest of the folks that put it together. I vote yes.
I didn't make personal comments about it.
I vote yes. And
we're
taking
the vote.
I understand that.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes, I ditto what Van said.
I also vote yes. Thank you and your staff for all the hard work, Mr. Lank, and your staff and everybody else involved in this. And I would assume this is something, Mr. Guy, that we're going to submit this. We can put this on the county website. People can look at it. But you'll take care of that? Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Vince. Thank you.
Mr. Moore, public hearing.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This is time and place for a public hearing on an ordinance to amend Chapter 110 of Sussex County Code relating to equivalent dwelling units are determined for certain commercial users and business users. Mr. Izzo and Mr. Tung will make a presentation. After that presentation, there will be an opportunity for the council to question them to get a better understanding. And then at that point, there will be a public hearing on the matter. The public can participate. At that point, if anyone would like to participate and speak, they need to come to the podium, give us your full name and address. And thank you, Mr. Izzo and Mr. Tom.
You don't stand too close.
When this was first brought up a couple weeks ago, went through and explained that we had, in the course of investigation and in the course of talking to some business people, and we determined that technology had changed so far as commercial washers and also commercial car washes. And we realized that we were, with the new technology, if with new units, we were clearly overcharging for the new units. So we talked to the county attorneys, and we asked that a change be made to our code to give the county engineer some latitude to adjust that assessment based on manufacturer's specifications that were submitted to us. We did not want to go back and totally revise the code that dealt with commercial laundries and commercial car washes because there's still a lot of old technology out in the field. At some point in time, I'll probably be back before you and say, can we just totally revamp that section of the code? But right now, all we're asking for is the applicant, and this would be for new businesses going in or if an existing business changes their equipment. We're simply asking that they could submit documentation for review by the county engineer, and we would have the ability to say yay or nay as to whether we would address the assessment. That's pretty much what
I have.
Any
questions from council?
Now, this ordinance is specifically just for those two uses?
Yes, it is.
Laundromats and car washers.
Yes,
so,
it is.
Because when I read the title up here, up in the top, it basically just says certain commercial/business users. So it's not going to be if somebody's other than a laundromat or a car wash, another type of commercial business comes in,
could approach us if they can make a case that the assessment as it exists today is not accurate based
on
the use.
In other words, I'm trying to find out. We're specifying laundromats and car washes. Does this give you the flexibility to go to somebody who's a hairdresser or something?
This ordinance specifically is just adding J, which is very specific as to commercial laundromats car washes.
Okay.
And that is being added, and the J, the underlined language, is the part that's being amended and added.
Okay, so again, then, from your comments, as maybe technology changes in other areas, we may see in the future the easiest way to deal with it is just to keep amending this ordinance as opposed to rewriting
That would be a possibility. Like I say, part of the issue with this is you're dealing with such large numbers.
Right.
A commercial laundry could be, 25 or 30 EDUs under our current standards. But when you actually look at the manufacturer specifications, it could be half of that. So we're dealing with a large quantity, and that's why, and a car wash is the same thing. So that's why we focused in on these. Some of the other common appliances are, a smaller volume.
Well, maybe, should we have an ordinance maybe that just gives you the flexibility, Mike, to deal with any, maybe an agribusiness like a pickle processor who captured his water and put it back in or something? In other words, if any business / commercial, maybe / industrial,
that
operation could prove to you that they're not going to have the usage that we've recommended or whatever, that you could make it the flexibility, or should we just stick with addressing as things change?
Why don't we do this? Why don't we internally do kind of an audit of our ordinance and see instances where flexibility does not exist?
Right.
And then we can come back to you with a report and say, within the next year, let us take a look at these different uses
and
come up with some flexibility.
Things change.
I'm not aware exactly where the inflexibility exists.
Well, things change fast, and if somebody came in a shopping center and some vacant spot that was a restaurant or maybe a shoe store is now, we arrive. I mean, do they come to the county when they, if somebody had a shoe store, how would we know?
They're supposed to.
Right.
It's supposed to be a tenant fit-up process because they should be coming in to secure a building permit. At that time, we would find out that they're converting from a shoe store to a restaurant. That always does not happen. So we do periodic field checks. Our inspectors are aware of what's going on within the district. You mentioned industrial users. In the industrial or pretreatment portion of our ordinance, there are provisions that govern that so far. Like you say, they would not be discharging all of their water from a particular process. An industrial user, if they're classified as an industrial user and have a pretreatment permit, then there are provisions in the ordinance to govern.
So you have flexibility
on an industrial user.
Industrial,
yes.
But on commercial users right now. But okay, that's a good way to address it. It might be an easy way of just you know, doing it like this.
These were two cases where the EDUs were set in the ordinance, and how we count the EDUs, totally inflexible. We were trying to solve that problem, and we'd be glad to look and see if there's other similar instances.
Well, things change 5 years from now. I mean, do we just so we don't have to keep going back all the time, but we'd have a...
Does that mean cause a car wash uses lesser water? Mm-hmm. Does that mean he's going to use lesser detergent?
They capture it. They actually, Sam, recycle.
The new process is, it's a recycling process. But so far as, how a car wash works in detergent, I really don't know anything.
Are you going to run the soap back to again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just don't drink the water when you're there, when you're washing it. Right? Mm-hmm.
So if you have an existing car wash or laundromat and it upgrades, it can apply, would this apply to that?
We would need to see some sort of manufacturer's documentation usage. Yes.
And proof that they made the changes.
Right, not just to new businesses.
No, it's not just new. If there's an existing business out there and they've upgraded their machines or what have you, it would apply to them as well.
If they're that large and we got all these kind of problems checking, why don't we just put a meter on the thing and be done with it?
And I don't want to speak for Michael on this.
You have to hire meter readers, for one thing, and we don't have meter readers on staff.
We're talking about these big users, commercial and those kinds.
Cousin Sam, we'll get some meter readers.
Any more questions?
I set my meter read in for years with Delaware Electric.
Well, they do have new technology that they're not, meter readers aren't walking around so much now anymore. Right. There is these different ways of doing it now, but there is, many people have said meters, but we just have wells. A lot of people are on wells. A lot of people are on this kind of water system, so it's all
we've only got the one water district.
Right, Dewey Beach is somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you because I know in my district we did help a small business in my district, help them get established, and I just think hats off to you. Good job. Thank you.
What about the rest of the county?
Okay, are there any other questions of council? If not, is there anyone here, any member of the public that would like to address this issue? Is there any member of the public that would like to address this issue? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter. And if council desires, I could read the short title for a vote.
We'll close the public hearing, close public comment. And Mr. Moore, please read the short title.
It's an ordinance to amend Chapter 110 of the Code of Sussex County relating to how equivalent dwelling units, EDUs, shall be determined for certain commercial/business users.
Make a motion we adopt that ordinance.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips, to adopt the ordinance as presented. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Sir.
Thank you.